It's April 20th, 2023. The time is 1456 hours. Ward Green here. Today's study will be the continuation of our Wild Road article, as well as starting the book of Exodus, I believe, hopefully, prayerfully. But also, I'm updating what I did on the broken trees yesterday outdoors in my in Jehovah's property here. I had to cut the tree. I had to lop off this part of the tree that was broken in this case, and then let me see if I can find the other parts. Here we go. Here's the other place. There's a different tree to the west of that first tree. And this tree was broken quite severely also in a couple of different ways. You can get a better view of it here. For example, you see the different parts of that tree that were broken, but that I had to cut off. They were already broken and leaning on the ground before I cut them. And then there was a branch here, a branch or two I had to cut off of that tree there, left of center. So that's it for the work that I did yesterday. But it was so important to get that done. So these trees are now lying on the ground, essentially. And that was for safety reasons. Now, this is Robert Cathcart III talking about the lack of large-scale studies with regard to the use of vitamins.
Basically, I would say that where medicine is really going wrong these days is that the drug companies can only research drugs that are patentable, which means that all of the natural substances of which the body is made are not patentable. Now, it takes $200 million to get a new drug through the FDA. So who's going to spend $200 million trying to get a natural substance through the FDA, you see? So they say, well, it hasn't been proven scientifically. Well, the definition of proving something scientifically is to spend $200 million to prove a drug to the satisfaction of the FDA. We see what happens there is drugs like Vioxx get approved that sometimes kill people, whereas nobody can come up with $200 million to prove that vitamin C helps people, you see. So therefore, vitamin C in their mind is not proven scientifically.
Okay. Very nice. So the fact that vitamins are not patentable, you can't patent a vitamin, and that makes them unappealing or virtually impossible for drug companies to utilize, because they can't make any money on the patents if there are no patents. So here we have Chapter 7. And I just want to skip over paragraphs 2 and 3. Yeah, they're interesting, but we can, for today, we can read them privately. Whoever's interested should read those, but they're just non-essential. But what I want to talk about is, I think it's 7-4, right? Yes, the addition of the Israelite element to this story of markings on rocks. Right, it adds controversy, and because of its religious component, it adds pressure onto its proponents. Because of the presence of anti-Semitic organizations, or let's say maybe influences. This makes simple, cogent arguments more so preferred, and ones based on obscure linguistic studies less so. Primarily thus are the best arguments logistical and thoroughly logical in nature, then all other evidence. Within the realm of the logistical arguments, what are the reasons for a large number of inscriptions located at specific geographic locations throughout the Sinai? Unless they be made by the original group of trekkers, and then, later, added to by those interested in them. Logic would dictate that later fans of the Israelites attempting to retrace their wilderness route wouldn't be sure enough to warrant their making of inscriptions along any route unless that route were clearly marked. This is true even where inscriptions are easily made. It is, however, the case that the locations where such inscriptions are found are not always very accessible, but they are sometimes high up on the rock wall faces. Indeed, it was the concerted effort on the part of the original makers of these inscriptions to preserve them by making them inaccessible, as though a vital record. The knowledge of the route taken would be missing were the inscriptions only made by later religious zealots, for they could not have been sure enough of the route. In other words, not sure enough to climb these sheer rock faces and make inscriptions. So logic requires that the first trekkers were Israel, and the proof is that later inscriptions were added by believers who believed that Israel followed the route. So if they believed that Israel followed the route, then they might be willing to climb these steep rock faces themselves, virtually vertical faces, and make their own inscriptions because of their faith. But if they were the first ones to make the inscriptions, it seems that they would have had to have had a good reason to scale these sheer rock faces, because they could have made inscriptions at more accessible places. So that's the study of Wild Road for today, from Part 1, Chapter 7, Paragraph 4. Now, yesterday we did Proverbs 13 and 20. Today, little children, our study here is from Ecclesiastes. Two are better than one. Two are better than one because they have a good reward for their hard work. A very often missed principle. It's useful because it applies in so many different circumstances that two are better than one. Just, for example, two facts are better than one in case one fact falls by the wayside. There are so many reasons why two are better than one. And the other thing we wanted to do today was our reading in Exodus. Today we're in the book of Exodus. And I think we're going to do the first two chapters today. Now, these are the names of Israel's sons who came into Egypt with Jacob. Jacob being known as Israel, of course. Each man and his household came: Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and Benjamin, Dan and Naphtali, Gad and Asher. And all the souls who issued out of Jacob's upper thigh came to be 70 souls. But Joseph was already in Egypt. Eventually, Joseph died, and also all his brothers and all that generation. And the sons of Israel became fruitful and began to swarm. And they kept on multiplying and growing mightier at a very extraordinary rate, so that the land got to be filled with them. In time, there arose over Egypt a new king who did not know Joseph. And he proceeded to say to his people, "Look, the people of the sons of Israel are more numerous and mightier than we are. Come. Come on. Let us deal shrewdly with them, for fear they may multiply, and it must turn out that in case war should befall us, then they certainly will also be added to those who hate us, and will fight against us and go up out of the country." So they set over them chiefs of forced labor for the purpose of oppressing them in their burden bearing, and they went building cities as storage places for Pharaoh, namely Pithom and Ramses. But the more they would oppress them, the more they would multiply, and the more they kept spreading abroad, so that they felt a sickening dread as a result of the sons of Israel. Consequently, the Egyptians made the sons of Israel slave under tyranny, and they kept making their life bitter with hard slavery at clay mortar and bricks, and with every form of slavery in the field. Yes, every form of slavery of theirs in which they used them as slaves under tyranny. Later on, the king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, the name of one of whom was Shiphrah, and the name of the other, Puah. Yes, he went so far as to say, when you help the Hebrew women to give birth and you do see them on the stool for childbirth, if it is a son, you must also put it to death. But if it is a daughter, it must also live. However, the midwives feared the true God, and they did not do as the king of Egypt had spoken to them, but they would preserve the male children alive. In time, the king of Egypt called the midwives and said to them, why is it you have done this thing in that you preserve the male children alive? In turn, the midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, because they are lively, they have already given birth before the midwife can come into them. So God dealt well with the midwives, and the people kept growing more numerous and becoming very mighty. And it came about that because the midwives had feared the true God, he later presented them with families. Finally, Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every newborn son you are to throw into the river Nile, but every daughter you are to preserve alive. Exodus chapter 2. Meantime, a certain man of the house of Levi went ahead and took a daughter of Levi, and the woman became pregnant and brought a son to birth. When she saw how good-looking he was, she kept him concealed for 3 lunar months. When she was no longer able to conceal him, she then took for him an ark of papyrus and coated it with bitumen and pitch and put the child in it and put it among the reeds by the bank of the river Nile. Further, his sister, stationed the child's sister, stationed herself at a distance to find out what would be done with him. After a while, Pharaoh's daughter came down to bathe in the Nile River, Pharaoh's daughter, and her female attendants were walking by the side of the Nile River. And she caught sight of the ark in the middle of the reeds. Immediately, she sent her slave girl that she might get it. When she opened it, she got to see the child, and here the boy was weeping. At that, she felt compassion for him, although she said, this is one of the children of the Hebrews. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and specially call for you a nursing woman from the Hebrew women that she may nurse the child for you? So Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. At once the maiden went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter then said to her, take this child with you and nurse him for me, and I myself shall give you your wages. Accordingly, the woman took the child and nursed him, and the child grew up. Then she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, so that he became a son to her, and she proceeded to call his name Moses, and to say, it is because I have drawn him out of the water. Now it came about in those days, as Moses was becoming strong, that he went out to his brothers, that he might look at the burdens they were bearing, and he caught sight of a certain Egyptian striking a certain Hebrew of his brothers. So he turned this way and that, and saw that there was nobody in sight. Then he struck the Egyptian down and hid him in the sand. However, he went out on the following day, and here there were 2 Hebrew men struggling with each other. So he said to the one in the wrong, why should you strike your companion? At this he said, who appointed you as a prince and judge over us? Are you intending to kill me just as you killed the Egyptian? Moses now got afraid and said, surely the thing has become known. Subsequently, Pharaoh got to hear of this thing, and he attempted to kill Moses. But Moses ran away from Pharaoh, that he might dwell in the land of Midian. And he took a seat by a well. Now the priest of Midian had 7 daughters. And as usual, they came and drew water and filled their gutters to water their father's flock. Now let's just look first, before we continue, at the scripture at Acts, just to get the context here, what it says in Acts about this. Is it Acts I'm looking for? Let me think. It's Acts chapter 7, 23, I think it is. Here it is. Now, when the time of his 40th year was being fulfilled, it came into his heart, talking about Moses, to make an inspection of his brothers, the sons of Israel. So he was 40 years old at this time. Whereas we just read in Exodus that it was at the time of his becoming strong, as it said. In verse 11, he was becoming strong. So he was 40 years old, according to the book of Acts. Okay. So now continuing in verse 17, and as usual, this is in Midian, the shepherds came and drove them away. These are the seven daughters of the priest of Midian. They were driven away. At this, Moses got up and helped the women out and watered their flock. So when they came home to Reuel, their father, he exclaimed, "How is it you have come home so quickly today?" To this they said, "A certain Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds, and besides, he actually drew water for us that he might water the flock." Then he said to his daughters, "But where is he? Why is it that you have left the man behind? Call him, that he may eat bread." After that, Moses showed willingness to dwell with the man, and he gave Zipporah, his daughter, to Moses. Later she bore a son, and he called his name Gershom, because he said, "An alien resident I have come to be, that is, in a foreign land." And it came about during those many days that the king of Egypt finally died, but the sons of Israel continued to sigh because of the slavery and to cry out in complaint. And their cry for help kept going up to the true God because of the slavery. In time, God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So God looked on the sons of Israel and took notice. So God does hear the cries of his servants. He heard their groaning. Verse 24. And Moses had come into Midian. And we know the timing for this was about the year 1533 BCE in the genealogy, 40 years before the Exodus, and the same time, close to it, when the Hyksos were expelled from Egypt, they being the rulers of the Nile Delta, and Moses, we might believe, grew up in the household of this Pharaoh, who was one of the Hyksos. And we have named him in the Articles of the Genealogy. The Pharaoh's name was Apophis, who ruled at the time of the birth of Moses. So this is the conclusion. This is all for today in our study, I believe. It seemed very short. I was thinking it was going to be a very long study. I prepared, but I thought it was going to take a very long time. I don't think there's anything much more that I want to say today. So that's good if we can keep it short. It is Thursday, April 20th, 2023, and the time is, it's hard to see, 15:15. Yeah, there's a post in my way. 15:15 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Now it's 15:16 Eastern Daylight Time. And I love you all very much. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for watching. I hope you enjoyed it. Praise Jehovah and his son. What was I going to say about Jesus? He's the King of Kings. Jesus is the Lord of Lords. And on behalf of me, Ward Green, it's Hammy the Crow and Cammy saying bye for now.